for the Chairperson has done. I know that you don't have a venue, but it's Tuesday, we are here in your committee. And then I'm also joined by Ms. Inba Thambiran, who is the Program Manager for Procurement and Delivery Management, one of the programs or divisions at the CIDP, as well as our CFO, Mr. Peter Mouyan. May I allow the Chairperson to say a few words as a matter of protocol?
Good afternoon. You can actually see even from handling this mic that this is a new person indeed. Thank you so much for giving us an opportunity to come and present to you. The CIDB, which is the Construction Industry Development Board, was formed from the CIDB Act number 38 of 2000 with the intention of developing and regulating the construction industry in South Africa. Today we are, the whole team is coming to present to you the strategy and the business plan under the leadership of the CEO. There is not much for me to say except that I'm going to hand over to the executive of the CIDB to present this to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson of the CIDB. If I may then continue, honorable members. Thank you for the comment, the opening statement that came from the honorable chairperson of the portfolio committee. I will, in the course of my presentation, deal with the issues that have been raised, but I would like also to consolidate some of the points by referring to specific activities that have taken place. The intention is to present a strategic plan for the years 2011-2012 to 2015-2016, the annual performance plan very briefly for the anchor year 2011-2012, as well as deal with the budget for both the strategic plan as well as the annual performance plan. The presentation outline is as follows. We will present the strategic plan in terms of the state of alignment with the National Treasury Framework, the new framework, and then we'll deal with Part A and Part B of the strategic plan, and then we'll deal with the annual performance plan, as I said, very briefly dealing with the NKIA, which is actually part of the strategic plan, and there also I will attempt to cover the state of alignment with the National Treasury Framework, and then Part A and Part B. Part B will be similar to what we would have done in terms of the last bullet under Part A, strategic outcomes oriented goals. The information is similar. I would like us to look at the hard copy documents that were distributed earlier. I'll indicate what pages if there's still a requirement for us to go over that again. And then lastly, we'll deal with the budget at the high level. The CFO may then add what I would have presented there. If I may then deal with the strategic plan, the state of alignment with National Treasury. In the past, it was required that in September we would submit the draft documents, that is the threat plan, the business plan, as well as the materiality framework. We did that in September last year, and that document was quite detailed, and we were preparing to submit the final version of those documents by end of February, as was required in the past. And then we received the National Treasury Framework, the new framework. The move from the previous documents was quite extensive. We required to actually consult with various components of our business. We had a wish to actually do it and meet the requirements 100%, but it was actually very difficult. So what we did was taking advantage of the extension that was given by National Treasury to then submit the annual performance plans by end of April. We worked on our annual performance plan. That is the annual performance plan that was submitted to the executive authority. We then also requested then to have a strategic plan that would talk to the annual performance plan, because the emphasis that was put on the two documents would actually lead to the two documents not talking to one another. You may have seen that various entities have actually used different terminology. Instead of annual performance plan, you find others still using business plan. Others would actually call it the corporate plan instead of the strategic plan. We are trying to make sure that we don't use the terminology that is of the past, but rather follow the National Treasury framework. So we're not 100% there, but we believe that the work that we've continued to do until the submission that was made to the executive authority has actually formed a firm foundation for us going forward. We have interacted with National Treasury for clarity, because we realized that most people, even those that were providing training to various organizations, were actually not sure about specific areas. Specifically, in terms of the additional years, the fourth and fifth years, you'll see that in terms of the presentation later on the budget, we've included those years. In many areas, we actually do talk about the fourth and fifth years, but it has been difficult in terms of then establishing specific programs. So this is the improvement that we'll continue to do. And it was mainly because of the challenges that we're facing in terms of timing. Our activities around the periods February to April are very intense in terms of stakeholder engagement. But also we faced a situation between October, November, and December last year because we had an outgoing board whose term was ending in the middle of December. As we mentioned, the board appointment process has just been finalized. We have a newly appointed board whose meeting is actually going to take place for the first time on the 30th of this month, that is on Monday next week. In terms of the legislative framework and mandate of the CREB, we are established by an Act of Parliament, obviously, and therefore we have a specific mandate. We know that when we engage with stakeholders, they may want us to do other things that are not part of the mandate. We do feel sensitive about these issues, and therefore, as we move forward, we also identify areas where our mandate could actually be amended going forward. But I will state the mandate as it stands today. That is to provide strategic leadership to industry stakeholders to stimulate sustainable growth, reform, and improvement. When later on I talk about this element of the mandate, it is about providing an enabling environment. There are many things that we do to actually enhance this particular area. The second leg of our mandate is that of regulating the construction industry. Again, you'll see later on that our activities are geared towards this element as a highly prioritized area. And when we talk about fraud and corruption later on, you'll then understand that it is indeed a very important area. Among other things, we're also mandated to establish a number of registers. The first two, the Register of Contractors and the Register of Projects, were activated from 2004. There are other registers that the Act mandates us to establish and maintain, but these we may establish and maintain, as opposed to the first two, which we must establish and maintain. So the Register of Professional Service Providers, the Built Environment Consultants, to be specific, as well as the Register of Material Suppliers and the Register of Material Manufacturers, have actually been put on the back bench at the moment until such time that many of the problems that pertain to the industry have actually been resolved. If you regulate the appointment of contractors, for instance, and the registration of projects, we believe at this stage that the next one should actually be having a register of the built environment consultants, because then we'll make impact in the industry. The others will then be introduced as and when the needs become critical. If I may then go back to our distilled mandate, I indicated that we have two main pillars, the summary of our mandate. One is that of providing an enabling environment or a developmental arm, which has been happening since inception. The second one is that of a regulator of the industry. and it goes with the enforcement of compliance. For instance, the space that we operate in is that of the public sector clients having to apply the requirements of the CRDB. The private sector is outside of that space, except in terms of the register of projects, where the private sector is also required to register their projects, because they would add to the experience or expertise that the contractors would have been exposed in and part of their track record. So the regulation environment is actually the one that is prioritized at the moment, because while the enabling environment was the first one to be focused on, the regulatory function of the CRDB had to become important over time after we had actually capacitated the public sector clients. The change of emphasis is very important for us because as we go forward, we need to establish a revenue model that will support the funding of the CRDB in future based on specific requirements. I want to emphasize at this stage that the work of the CRDB in terms of the various programs that we have is cross-cutting. Therefore, when we deal with the budget, for instance, and if you take the approach of an activity-based budget, it becomes difficult because all the different programs that we'll talk about later actually participate in the creation of value and the delivery on our mandate. I just want to emphasize this because as we go along, we'll then start talking about it in that way. I would not like to say a lot about the vision of the CRDB, but this was crafted with the involvement of staff. But I wanted to highlight mainly the mission of the CRDB, the area that is highlighted in red, to strategically and deliberately promote the empowerment of small, medium, and micro enterprises to improve their capability and grow the economy. That element was put in specifically because the big companies do not need our support in terms of their capacity. They have their own capacity. So it's in terms of assisting the emerging sector that would actually be seen to be making impact. In terms of the requirement to provide the updated situational analysis in terms of the new framework, I'll just go through a few slides to indicate what the industry has gone through, where it is now, and the challenges in context that the CRDB is facing in terms of providing support to the industry. We had a boom in the construction industry between roughly 2004 and 2007. And then there was a slowdown on new projects, reducing the business confidence in the building and construction industry from the end of 2008. That's about the same time as well when we had the global financial crisis, which culminated in the economic recession of 2009-2010. We noted that the South African construction industry was seen to be resilient, but that was not by luck, although there may have been an element of luck, but it was because of government's deliberate intention to invest in infrastructure. I'm saying there's a bit of luck because we did not know a number of years ago that we would actually win the bid to host the FIFA Soccer World Cup last year. So therefore, government took a decision to actually even fund the stadia that would actually support the 2010 FIFA Soccer World Cup. But the intention of raising this point is that we've seen quite a number of projects, big projects, multi-year, multi-billion rand projects that were already awarded, and therefore the impact of the economic recession was seen to be of a very soft blow to the construction industry. But we need to also say that the emerging sector did suffer because the people who were building, were involved in the construction in these big projects were mainly big contractors with subcontracting taking place for the emerging sector. But there was a lot of pressure on some of them, and where there's pressure, you need to then have a critical balance between delivery as well as empowerment. Again, it is not the CRDB that was driving this project. We never award contracts to anyone. We actually deal with our mandate as indicated before. But perhaps one could actually mention here that we strongly believe, and we need to mention this quite a lot, that the delivery on the 2010 FIFA World Cup stadia happened on time as a result of a proper regulation environment or regulatory environment in South Africa. And that is the CRDB getting involved, the support that we gave to the host cities in terms of dealing with the procurement element, because sometimes the procurement element would actually take long with people debating how it should be done. So when it comes to construction in South Africa, that area is well known. Therefore, we can provide support to any of the public sector clients. The opportunity to demonstrate capability and capacity by the South Africans, maybe working here and there with people from outside South Africa, can now be used to actually provide the much-needed infrastructure in areas where our communities would actually benefit. So in terms of the 2010 infrastructure, we all got excited with the physical element, we all got excited with the sport, but we believe that we need to manage the business in a different way now. We are worried that the new projects have slowed down, and people think they have slowed down after the FIFA Soccer World Cup. This started happening already in 2008. But in addition to this, I would like to mention two points. One is the delay in payments, which we actually raise in every forum where we attend with stakeholders, that the delay in payments is actually killing the industry, especially the emerging contractors, and I would say mostly black-owned construction companies. The other element also is that these companies are closing shop because of the delays in payments. Now, we can talk about creating new jobs, but if we're losing the ones that we have currently, it is a sad state. We can talk about supporting SMMEs, but if we destroy the ones that we have, it's a sad situation again. So we believe that we need to actually intervene, working with all partners, including government, to make sure that the payment processes are actually speeded up. And we're happy that wherever we've gone, we've had support from political leadership, the MECs in the provinces, the national ministers have also confirmed that they are actually taking this matter very seriously. But the CRDP is working with quite a number of parties to make sure that this process is facilitated. And I just wanted to mention here that the transformation agenda of government could actually be frustrated if these things are not taken care of by all parties involved. This slide is just to show you, in terms of the payment delays, that the situation has actually gone worse from those clients that could pay within 30 days to a situation where clients are actually paying between 60 and 90 days. And with SMMEs, you actually kill them within 1 or 2 months. Another slide, again, showing the impact on the employment. This is looking at formal employment of construction workers, that we saw an improvement going up to, the middle of 2008, and it started slowing down because of the global financial crisis as well as the economic recession. As I said, the South African construction industry was seen to be resilient, but the emerging sector was mostly affected. Some of the things were beginning to show that the industry was not going to be sustainable at those levels that we saw in between 2004 and 2009. The Register of Contractors, one of the important registers that we use, the barometer of what is happening in the industry, currently has more than 111,000 registrations that would come from just over 80,000 registered contractors. We're monitoring the growth of the register of contractors because it tells us where things are going. For quite a number of years, we're under pressure, as I will show just now in one of the graphs. We still have a problem with specific skills. The CBE executives actually presented here about the shortage of people not actually being registered. One of the areas that the CRDP recognized a long time ago was that there are people, especially the young people who went to former technicons or universities of technology, as they are called today, and they cannot graduate because they have not had the opportunity to work for somebody around the areas of their qualification so that they can graduate. It's a precondition that they must have experiential training. We actually made headway in terms of this. We have kick-started a pilot, and a group of 22 candidates have already been taken up by industry, and therefore they can be guaranteed an opportunity to graduate going forward. So this makes impact in terms of skilling the youth and in terms of improving their employability. There are various initiatives. We are fast-tracking the National Contractor Development Program, which talks to contractor development, as the chairperson had raised the point. We are fast-tracking that program. We had agreed with the previous board, and I'm sure that we'll agree with the new board that this is a priority area. We want this to be part of the national agenda. We're also facilitating training. I want to pause a bit here and indicate that while this is not our mandate as such, Contractor development cannot be done by CRDP because we don't award contracts. You need to train people on projects. We don't have projects that we give to contractors. But we have a framework that we've developed, and we're using that framework to align client-specific contractor development programs. And it's beginning to make impact. We've been to a number of provinces. We're using a different approach now. It seems to be working better. Training is not our mandate. There are various organizations. The construction sector, for instance, is supposed to take responsibility for this area. But we've been requested by this committee and by previous ministers, by various other political leadership, that we need to actually get involved in terms of training. Now, we choose the words very carefully. We're saying we're facilitating training. We've even started putting funding in areas where training must happen so that people can see what kind of training should actually take place. We work with quite a number of people that would actually be pursuing this, people who are actually going to be assisting with training. We want tertiary institutions to start training on the CRDP requirements so that the industry can be supported. And again, we're saying that transformation in the industry is a concern, but we believe that going forward, we will begin to make impact. Unfortunately, in this industry, it does take long. In terms of strategic outcomes, I've selected only two programs here. There are four core programs at the CRDP. I've taken just two to be able to illustrate how we actually deal with strategic outcomes. I will start with the Construction Industry Performance Program, CIP. And again, when I deal with the various elements, I'll then refer you to the document that has been prepared so that we can understand it better. I'll then end with CRS, which is the Construction Registers Service or Registers Program. In terms of CIP and background, the program focuses on industry performance improvement, which is a very important element as we move forward. A key focus for the CIP program for this current year is to make sure that we have the development of the best practice schemes. Now, there are two best practice schemes, one related to it's actually the best practice contractor recognition scheme, which is related to contractors. The other one is related to projects, and it is called the best practice project assessment scheme. This is where we want to deal with the quality, with health and safety, as well as the management of the environment. So it's a very important and critical project that we do around the country. It's currently at a pilot stage, and I'm sure you'll hear more about this going forward. The performance improvement and contractor development, and as I said, our programs are cross-cutting. We have this program also getting involved in contractor development while contractor development is hosted by another program. Performance improvement and project delivery, infrastructure delivery skills, national infrastructure maintenance strategy, a strategy that was approved by Cabinet in 2006 in August. We launched it in May 2008. Not much had actually happened. We've been promised that early in this financial year would actually get funding from the department to be able to pursue this. We're just dealing with the memorandum of understanding recently, and I hope that the funds would actually be transferred so that we can roll out the strategy, because the beautiful infrastructure that we are building at the moment is actually going to collapse going forward if we don't take care of it. It is a strategy. It is not a program of maintenance. The second, development and academic excellence. We're working with universities to make sure that especially the young people can be exposed to research and development so that we can sustain the industry. And we want to encourage them to actually stay on at universities and acquire the necessary research skills. I wanted to just say that we have produced an excellent quality of internal endorsed publications. If you visit our website or you want to get hard copies, you'd actually have access to these. They are beginning to be used by people who are doing university studies. We conduct surveys with a number of partners so that we can actually get to give stakeholders information about how the industry is performing for their own decisions. In terms of performance information, before we get to that, I just wanted to indicate to you that as part of the surveys that we do, it's some of the slides that I'm showing on the screen, where we conduct surveys to see how satisfied the clients are with the performance of the contractors, but also how satisfied contractors are with the performance of clients. And it's a very interesting topic, and we believe that going forward, this would actually be used by various stakeholders in the industry. I'm going to show you about three slides that support the slide that I showed before about payment delays. We actually look at various segments of the industry to see where the problem is actually coming from, like this one for contractors. Another one, well, it's also for contractors, but looking at the various aspects, private sector, public corporations, et cetera. Even the private sector has actually been a culprit of not actually paying on time. And then the client's agents, the impact on them. And then if I could then go back to the slide that was going to talk to the performance of or the strategic outcomes for the CIP program. I wanted to quote a page number which is related to our strategic plan. It is this document that was distributed earlier, strategic plan. And if you look at that, it starts from page 31. And the table that we would like to talk about is actually on pages 35 and 36 for this particular program. This is just to illustrate to you how we prepare this. We wanted to put up a slide on this, but it was very difficult because the information would actually not be visible on the screen. So if you look at it, you'll actually see that according to the requirements of the new framework, we have to provide information in history and then provide information going forward so that stakeholders can then see the trend in terms of any program that we're involved in, how things have happened in the past, and how we plan to actually take that forward. So I'm not sure if there will be questions on this, but this is how the information is actually packaged. Now, all that information is talking to the areas that I've highlighted for the program called the CIP. So it's not the one that I was showing now, but the one that we're looking at before, this particular program, CIP. So that is how we've actually structured the information, and it was our attempt, although there was no requirement to be necessarily 100%, but we wanted to actually make sure that as soon as we got the instruction to use the new framework, that we actually attempt to use it so that next time we submit our strat plan, we actually already have a foundation. If I may then go to CRF using the same approach again, where we highlight the focus areas as part of the strategic outcomes. Sorry, I've gone back to the presentation now. When I get to the performance information, I'll quote the page numbers again for you. This is just one slide, and then we'll go to the hard copy. The focus on the registers program called CRS is the register of contractors, where contractors want to see impact in terms of service delivery. The software rewrite and EDMS is electronic document management system. Since the CRDP was established, we had an in-house developed software. We did not think that it would actually go beyond 100,000 registrations. So the current software would not be able to cope. We've modified it a bit while we're actually developing a new software. This software is going to be flexible. It's a flexible platform. We can then add the other registers as we develop them. This will deal with efficiency and quality in that program. Will detect and mitigate fraud and corruption, which is a critical element of how the program actually runs. Staff training will be dealt with as a focus outcome, and then we'll focus on the iTender register of projects. We have the register of contractors, the register of projects. We also have what we call the iTender, which is like your SAPC TV, through which all public sector clients must advertise their projects, construction projects. Now, we decided to combine the iTender, where clients initially advertise, with the register of projects because there is a link in terms of that project ultimately getting awarded. So they work together. We've combined them for now. So it's been given high priority. We've, for the first time, provided dedicated staff to actually drive it forward because it was lagging behind compared to the register of contractors. Now, if we look at the performance information just to make sure that we see where we are going together. It is actually on the basis of the document that I showed you. Starts from page 44 with the background that I've just gone through, and then page 46 then deals with the performance information. And again, a few years going back to actually establish our foundation, and then a few years going forward as per the requirements of the new framework. Again, the targets actually are, according to the SMART approach, again, based on the guidelines from National Treasury. I wanted to just also show you, in terms of the register of contractors, the challenge that we're sitting with in terms of the statistics. I won't go into details. We can package information on the statistics to show women-owned construction companies, youth-owned construction companies, black-owned construction companies, but I'm showing here the total by province for grade one contractors. We're currently sitting at just over 99,000 registrations coming from just over 70,000 registered contractors in grade one. That's about 80% of the total number of registrations. We believe that this then prompts us, because now we have actual information, to actually provide services to grade ones in a different way. We've already started in 2008 making sure that their registration is handled in a different way, and that has provided relief to them. If you look at grades 2 to 9, we have just over 12,000 registrations. That is the true capacity, construction capacity or contracting capacity in South Africa at this stage. The grade ones do not contribute positively to that contracting capacity. And this comes from just over 9,000 contractors. I felt I should show the stats, but we can show you stats that are modified according to what we want by province, by gender, and then indicate youth-owned construction companies. This is a graph that I promised to show you, which is beginning to indicate that there's beginning to be a slowdown in terms of the registrations that we receive. We're busy analyzing which grades are actually affected. Is it from grade 1 going up to grade 4, or is it grades 5 and 6? So all that information going forward will actually be exposed, because then it helps us to come up with strategies to actually support specific grades. You'll see that the graph has been steep all along until sometime last year, when it started almost indicating signs of tailing off. In terms of resource considerations, the CREB is both a knowledge organization and a knowledge-based organization. We actually fight with the industry for specific skills in certain areas. Not all areas are actually based on built environment qualified people. So the general shortage of specific skills is a problem both inside the CREB as well as outside. As I said, we're competing for the same target market. We use internal resources as well as external experts. We took a decision a few years ago to rather capacitate our own employees, but get the experts to actually support them. It takes a long time, because some of the experts we use have 20 years experience, and you cannot then, over 2 years or 3 years, have the same quality of experience and say we're not going to use external experts. So where we can use external experts, the contracts are actually specific. They have to capacitate the employees. Skills transfer is prioritized, as I indicate there. Risk management is a priority within the CIDB. It resides in the office of the CEO. We are supported by an outsourced internal audit unit with a future insourcing strategy. We want in future to have our own people actually doing the internal audit. The risk committee has been established. It is driven by the board, and therefore, as soon as we have the first meeting, I believe that we'll be able to actually have a constitution of the risk committee, or the constitution of the risk committee. The strategic and operational risks have been identified and ranked, but we are continuing to actually make improvements on these. The process is under review. Now, I would like to deal with the annual performance plan. So I've moved from the strategic plan to the annual performance plan. After this, we'll then present the budget of the CREB, covering the strategic plan as well as the annual performance plan. So what I'm going to do is I will actually indicate the focus areas that link to the important elements in the budget. I want to then say also that it's not 100% compliant with the national National Treasury framework. But again, it was not expected that it would be, but we've made an effort to make sure that in terms of structure, in terms of content, we move very close to that. In terms of our strategic overview, part A, we'll focus on the main areas, the maintenance of an efficient registration service, as I indicated before when we were talking about CRS, which talks to those elements that are listed there, an efficient, flexible, integrated, and suitable software, which will take quite some time, one of the biggest projects that the CREB has undertaken, and also multi-year. The costing is over a period of 3 years, and it will cost plus minus 13 million rand. And again, when it's established, it will be a flexible platform. This will include the electronic document management system that I referred to before, and we believe that this will assist in fighting fraud and corruption within the CIDP. The submission of documents will actually be handled in such a way that when you submit documents, they will be scanned. You cannot then submit documents into the same file without actually getting permission from senior management. Research and development agenda is supported together with academic capacity. We have what we call the Centers of Excellence that we've recently appointed. WITS University as well as the National Mandela Metro University have been appointed. We believe that it is through this that will make impact in terms of retaining the young people to be exposed to the culture of research, making sure that they can also be academics, because there is no country that can develop without relying on research. But the correct interpretation is important. The liaison between academic institutions and the industry also important. This is in addition to the postgraduate conferences that we've been running for a number of years at CIDP and the doctoral workshops, where we train young people on how to actually prepare their work if they want to do master's degrees as well as their doctorates. Again, a very important element that was not available in this way before, but the CIDP has intervened, and we feel that young people will actually benefit from that. The best practice schemes that I spoke about, I will not go into details, but again, emphasizing that the issue of quality is very controversial in the industry. Health and safety has been a problem, and the management of the environment, we are very active in all these areas, both locally as well as internationally. We are linked to researchers all around the world, and therefore it's very easy for us to make sure that we benchmark. And these are at various stages of piloting. Public sector procurement delivery, capacitation and enforcement of compliance, with the last element being emphasized, like I said before, but would need a budget, a serious budget, to actually support this. Mrs. Imba Zambaran is actually responsible for that program, and I can tell you that it is a challenge every day to deal with fraud and corruption. We thought by this time it would have tailed off, because we've exposed the names of the people who were corrupt on our website, in the commercial newspapers, as well as in the Government Gazette. But it looks like people who are corrupt will remain corrupt. But we believe that we are making impact. Human resource development within the CIDP, we believe that we must actually develop our own people so that the knowledge base that I was talking about can actually be supported. Mitigation of global warming, climate change, and related environmental issues as part of the best schemes, as well as just talking about it, because we're supposed to be leaders in the industry. But it talks to government's retrofitting program, working with various departments, including the Department of Public Works. There's a lot of work that has been done. Fraud and corruption. On the 6th of March, the CIDP issued a statement. You may have read, honorable members, that the collusive behavior of even big contractors was an issue when the Competition Commission decided to deal with them a few years ago. And by the 15th of April, they were given a deadline to actually come and confess where they've actually participated in collusive behavior. They are working with us, and therefore we see this as corruption, and therefore the CIDP will actually be disciplining contractors that have been found guilty. Alignment of programs and units for better efficiency. There are units that we feel could actually work better if they are working together, which is more of an operational issue. But then also we're looking at the core programs, where we'll actually engage the board in making sure that whatever restructuring takes place there is actually with the blessing of the accounting authority. Piloting of the Register of Professional Service Providers, we've engaged stakeholders here for quite a long time. There is a problem with the way the Act expected this to be done and the way the stakeholders expect it to be done. So the board in December last year decided that instead of continuing with these consultations where people do not agree, we should actually run a pilot and demonstrate exactly how the register can actually work. And again, it's work in progress. We'll actually be providing an update on how this happened. We'll be providing timelines, which we are working on as we speak. Alignment with government strategic priorities and presidential performance outcomes. I would like to mention here that the CIDP does not make direct impact. I think it's similar to what the CBE was also saying. We can't make direct impact because we don't employ people to work on projects. Yes, in terms of our own employees, our vacancy rate could be maybe one or two people that could not be employed because we're actually looking for a certain caliber of people, but we almost have 100% filling rate on positions. The outcomes 4, 5, 6, and 10 are the ones where we believe that indirectly will make impact. For instance, if you look at the ESTA, Employment Skills Development Agency, where I said 22 learners have now been placed with the industry, we believe that we're making impact in terms of supporting the youth, skilling the youth, and improving their opportunity to graduate and improve employment opportunity. In terms of the National Infrastructure Maintenance Strategy, we believe this would make impact in terms of the emerging sector, especially black contractors and women-owned contractors as well as youth-owned, and support BEE, but we also believe that this would actually support in job creation. We also have something that we started doing in 2005, the labor-based construction methods. There are roads that have been constructed in South Africa using these methods. We have a CD that we've been distributing. We've reprinted that CD while we're developing a new approach on labor-based methods. We believe this will support job creation. We've had invitations to various provinces to actually explain about this so that the provinces can then support the job creation, which is an agenda of government. In terms of the annual performance plan, looking at the two programs, I'm not sure if the honorable members would like us to go through the presentation of similar information as we showed before, but it is actually in the annual performance plan, all four core programs. That is, I'm taking these ones as examples so that it's easy for us to then understand how the CADB is planning. If I may just go on to present the budget, and then we can go back to the performance information if honorable members recommend that. As I indicated to you, we're trying to comply with the new framework as much as possible. We've extended this to cover 5 years as opposed to 3 years, and therefore we will see the anchor year. Sorry, I had the pointer here that I wanted to use. Yeah, I've got it. If you look at it, it doesn't show it very well on the screen, but this is the anchor year. In other words, when you talk business plan, we're talking about this year. But if you look across, you'll actually see that in terms of revenue, there's revenue from registers and other income, interest income that we don't want to emphasize at this stage, and transfer payments from CPW. So this one constitutes about 60% of our revenue, that one about 38% to 40%. It runs across like that. While I said that we're looking at a new revenue model based on the best practice schemes when they kick in, we prepared this budget without looking into that because it would be very risky to start talking about revenue that we think we'll collect when that cannot happen. So this will stay as main revenue streams, registers, income from the register of contractors, and the transfer payments from the department. So if you look at it running across, these are the amounts that are expected. And we get two tranches from the department. When it comes to this revenue here, we are actually conservative because contractors, when contractors come and register with us and we overstate our expectations, we might actually end up in the red. So we're conservative with it. For instance, what we've picked up in the last financial year is that the performance of that area of revenue was lower than the previous financial year. And therefore, in order to manage risk, we need to be a bit below what could happen, so that all the time we end up with a surplus as opposed to being in the red. Now, if you look at if you look at the years, then during this current financial year, we're looking at just over 109 million rand, growing to 114 million, 122 million, 130, and 139 on the outer year, the last year. If you look at expenditure, we have these various categories: personal expenditure, administrative expenditure, capital expenditure, professional and specialist services. And again, the breakdown goes accordingly like that. You will actually note that in terms of capital expenditure, there are things that we're expected to do, and we believe that at a certain time, we will actually start increasing. We've had capital expenditure in terms of the construction contact centers that we've built around the country. And again, we're very careful in terms of how we did that. We did not want CIDB to pay rental for these offices. They were very risky for us to establish, but we believed that they would help our people around the country. So we negotiated with the provincial department to provide us with the premises, and then would then provide staff as well as IT infrastructure. We have state-of-the-art IT infrastructure there. So the relationship that we have, and we've signed agreements with them that they will continue to provide these premises so that the CRDP does not pay rent. But we've had to actually put in the state-of-the-art IT infrastructure to make sure that the offices run as if people went to head office. So people in Cape Town, we have an office here, Corner Loop and Long Street. People don't have to go to Pretoria. We have an office, it's one office per province that has been negotiated like this, but the Department of Public Works in the province will actually establish satellite offices if they want to, will give support in terms of training. So roughly then, this is our expenditure, total expenditure matching our revenue up there. And the notes here just give more information about the analysis that that we've done. If I go to the next slide, I said there are four core programs at the CRDP, but we then have the Office of the CEO, which is actually being modified, and the what we call corporate services at the moment. So you can look at it as six departments with four core programs. In other words, it's this one, that one, that one, that one that I've taken you through in terms of strategic outcomes. But the Office of the Chief Executive looks after quite a number of support functions, marketing and communications, for instance, and we're changing that. The alignment that I was talking about talks to that, and we're combining some elements from my office to the Office of the CFO, that's corporate services. So going into the future, and by the end of this year, we'll have a different corporate services which has been detached from finance, SCM, and IT systems, because your skill set there will actually talk to one another. But when we talk about HR, we talk about corporate legal, we are now exposed to quite a number of areas that need us to go to court. We're disciplining our own staff. We may be dragged to the CCMA. We believe that we need capacity in terms of corporate legal. But special projects, we believe that putting special projects into the program actually slows them down, because when they focus on those, they then lose focus in terms of their specific mandate. So this is the structure in which we actually allocate our budget. They are cross-cutting, therefore doing a budget on an activity basis would be a challenge, but also we believe in a dynamic budget. We believe that managers who are leaders as opposed to managers who are administrators must actually be able to see an opportunity, a gap that will actually assist our people and take a decision at that time. I'm saying this because at some stage people might say, look, why did you move funds from this area to that area? When we do it on the basis of responding to the needs of the people, but making sure that we can still achieve the things that we actually committed to. I would like to stop here. This is the end of my presentation, and if there is any addition from my colleagues, or if you would like to start questions through you, Honorable Chair, we may do so. Sorry, I couldn't have lunch, because before I speak, I can't eat. I believe once we were done, then I'll have lunch.
Can we engage, or should I allow them? Is there any addition? Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, may I then say this? I think she will follow up. As you know, we've recently held successful elections. We now have new councillors that don't understand our processes. We believe that they may be complex, so we'll be engaging with them to actually train them on how to use construction procurement from the CRDP's point of view, but also engaging various other stakeholders to make sure that this happens as a matter of urgency. I thought my colleague who is running with that would actually add.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think the procurement regime in the public sector is a huge problem that we have right now. We have National Treasury that have its own set of rules and regulations, but those basically, compared to what we've got for construction, it's about pens and paper and cell phones. And there's a huge difference between the way you procure a cell phone to the way you procure a multi-billion rand construction project. And because of that, we've needed to really put focus on the rules that we've got in place for construction procurement and get our people that work within the supply chain divisions that have common responsibilities with buying pens and paper and procuring construction works to a level of professionalism. It's such a huge problem right now. We started to work with the universities and get tailor-made courses, and pretty soon we would really like to start prescribing that officials within a certain government department must have that level of accreditation in order to do this work. So the project we have with the universities is going to be extended to educating and taking our newly appointed councillors through a program of understanding of the rules for construction procurement also. Thank you.
Thank you.
You actually asked specific questions, and I think there's one that didn't come out strongly in the slide. The one that deals with the review of regulations. We actually went through an exercise over almost 18 months to actually prepare the amendments to the regulations for the registration process. That process has been concluded. We're actually interacting with the department to submit to the minister the revised regulations, but we've taken it throughout the country. We've spoken to various stakeholders, and therefore believe that that would make impact. The issue of health and safety was actually part of the slide, so I don't know if there would be a further emphasis. Contractor development, we're trying to elevate it to national status because we believe that the infrastructure development in the country, if you talk about more than 800 billion rands and the emerging sector is not developed, is not right. Because we can't develop directly, we're then talking to provinces. We have three provinces that we're running this with, and then we'll then cascade it down to the other provinces. We believe that is now going to make impact. We now have a steering committee with the Department of Public Works to prioritize this, and I think so far it's working very well.
Thank you very much. Let's engage with the presentation. Honorable Wanyamabila.
Let me take this opportunity to commend the ECIDB for the presentation. It was a detailed presentation, but I've got only a few questions to be clarified on. According to the information you provided to us, they are saying that you have outsourced the internal audit function, but at the same time, you have established the internal audit unit. Can you link the two? Any conditions that have been attached to the service provider? Because if we've established the unit, it means that you are planning to do away with the outsourcing, but the internal audit function be done within internally. Then the other one, Chair, you are saying under the fraud policy that all the existing employees were made aware of the policy. I don't know what strategy are you using when drafting these policies, because that is why at the end of the day people don't own the policies, because we don't involve them at the initial stage when the policy is being drafted. We just workshop them as if they are outside the stakeholders. So what are the procedures in drafting the internal policy? On your budget, when looking at this this document, this one, on page 52, then looking at this one, the presentation on page 18, the allocations there are not the same. Let me make an example. Expenditure under the CEO in this document is 9.516, and this one is 10.375. Moving to corporate, it's 29.32. Moving to growth, it's 25.27. To CIP, and also the use of the, what can I call it, the names. Here you are saying it's industry performance. Here you are saying it's construction industry performance. Again, it's not the same. It's 10, on the other side is 9. Then procurement here on the slide is 12. On the document is 10. Then register services is 21 on the slide. on the document is 20, but the total is the same. Which one should we approve out of the two? Can we be assisted? Then Chair, can we be clarified on the budget first then, so that we can be able to continue after we know very well which one to consider?
I don't know if we'll deal with this one and then continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The correct figures to use should be the one that are on the slide. That's the revision that we had actually used. You'll see that the total comes to the same amount, but it's just the allocation within the different units and the different categories. That should have actually come in into the final document. Apologies.
Follow up. I understand the explanation, Chair, but this will be a public document, this one. I think more money has been used to develop this document. I think as this committee, we need to also guide against the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So if this document would be a public document with wrong information, then as the committee, we have got this live with the correct information. I don't think that is correct. So I don't know how are they going to correct this.
Especially that the document with wrong information has been distributed today. And the ones with the correct, if I'm not mistaken, were distributed during the week. Can you please respond?
Thank you. I must apologize for the quality that you see in the documentation. We were under pressure. The printers actually need at least a week to actually work on the information. We sign off at various stages. So in this case, we could not actually do that. So I need to actually sit and compare the documents that we had prepared with this information so that we can, but the final document, and we have not actually produced the 100 copies as required for Parliament at this stage. We just got documents here, but we're going through a thorough process to make sure that the printers have actually produced the numbers that we wanted to produce and the quality of the information. So what you see here was something that was prepared for information here, but in terms of content, it was not supposed to be different from what we wanted to produce. But we are going to go back and then produce the document that will be distributed. It won't be bound like this. This was an emergency over a period of 1 or 2 days to actually make sure that we can engage. But we note the discoveries by the honorable members, because those are the things that we'll actually be fixing. And I saw that in the layout, because the designer was actually panicking. I saw that where they may have swapped tables, for instance, we need to go back. In fact, tomorrow we have a meeting to actually discuss where they may have swapped items. But the document to be produced will not actually be wasteful expenditure as such. We'll produce just a few copies to actually be able to engage.
Honorable Majopa?
No, we need the explanation. Yeah, this was the first document that was issued on the 19th, and this one is 26, but the others are 25. Maybe it's a mistake in the printing or writing the date. But I want to check what is the present date of the salary document. Because seemingly to me, I look at it from 250 to very high personal expenditure. It's like if you look at it, 57 million. And when you look at the actual program, it's down. What is the present date? And what is the norm of
yeah, through you, Honorable Chair. Can I? Yes, yeah. And Honorable Member, the correct percentage as we said, is actually what is on the slide now. The 40, you'll see we're averaging 49%, and over the period up to year 2015, we'll be on about 52%. And the reason for that is that you'll see there'll be a drop in the bottom line, which is the professional fees line. And that's where we're using consultants, but as we capacitate internally, you'll see that there's a bit of a switch as the capacity is created internally.
Yeah. Okay, I can look at the difference between the presentation and this one. It's different amount. But I think even then it's still very high because the money that goes directly to the service delivery seemingly is like 40-something, and then you see 49% personnel expenditure for this current financial year. It's very high because the norm in the other institutions, it doesn't exist. If you said the Department of Education, because they really deal with the personnel most of the time, they don't have the specific projects that they are dealing with. But I don't know whether you do have the size, or you just decide to say this is a percentage. The benchmarking, you have something of that sort around the issue of the personnel or salary.
Thank you, Honourable Madropa. Honourable members, I'm sitting with a problem here. The document that has been tabled is a wrong document, according to the way they're saying it. You see, it creates a very serious problem because the figures in here are not correct, and this is the document that has been tabled. And it's now, like she said, it's now a public a document. Even if you go and correct, as members of parliament, doesn't help us because already this has been tabled. I just wanted to say next time you need to be very careful when bringing documents for tabling. You know, because people will judge you on this. Honourable November. Yeah. It's a formal one. Mama November, you'll be followed by Mama Madlala.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to CIDB for such a thorough presentation, although with a lot of mistakes, as has already been said. But I want to know a small thing. It's on your recommendations on page 68. A lot has been said about stakeholder forums. My worry is that one will want to know who are the stakeholders. I know, for instance, we are from the rural municipalities and so on. My question is, is municipalities also part of the stakeholder forum? Because I think that is the first one in a local situation, is that municipalities should be engaged. And then when we go to these rural areas of these rural municipalities, you find out that people really doesn't have much knowledge of all these things. But when it goes down to Kaiharib, then the people of Kaiharib doesn't know anything about this. And those are the municipalities or the communities rechta apo indlala ikuba khona ngesikhosi, more than in Cape Town or in whatever, Johannesburg and so on.
Mama Jan.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, you know, I'm concerned about the late payments, especially to the SMMEs, because it is said that at the end they close shop. But actually, where's the actual delay? Is it with the government or is it with the budget itself? Can we be clarified exactly what causes that? Because it is said the late payments causes the close shop, especially to the SMMEs. also, we are told that there are publications, quality of internal and endorsed publications. If we can be told, how many are they, those publications, so far? And I haven't heard anything from the presenter about the women in construction and the people living with disability in the construction industry. Why I'm asking these questions is because in most of the instances, you'll find that women in the construction industry, usually there's a person behind that woman, or that woman is behind a certain person, as if she's the one who's in charge, yet no, there's a person in front, the woman is behind. If you can get the exact number of women in construction and people living with disability. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. CIDP.
Thank you, Madam Chair and honorable members. I'll respond to a number of these. I was trying to search for the publications that we have. We have a list of them. They are coming out all the time. It's very difficult to say we have so many only. There are those that are produced quarterly. So every quarter, for instance, you will see ECISA distributed to contractors, and we take responsibility for that, for the distribution, but we don't pay for the publication. So we struck a deal where we don't pay for some of these endorsed publications. Certain people actually produce them, and we provide the material, or the industry will provide material, but when it comes to distribution, because we want them to go to the majority of contractors, we then take care of the distribution. So ECISA is produced on a quarterly basis. We have copies in the office. The other publications, like the health and safety report, which was actually launched in 2009 in June, again, for the first time we did that because we wanted a baseline so that when people talk about improving or deteriorating statistics, we would actually talk about a baseline. So again, we work with partners to produce this. But the publications at the CRDP, I'm going to actually go through the list now. But I also wanted to sort of, I'm starting at the bottom because it's still fresh in my mind. In terms of women in construction, the CRDP coordinates Women in Construction Excellence Awards every year. We start with the provinces in August, beginning of August, and we culminate on the 31st of August with the national recognition of women in construction. As we say, we don't give projects as such, but we want, working with the stakeholders, especially clients, to actually contribute towards the recognition of these women. So the women who are actually recognized will get packages like a laptop to assist them in running their business. It could be a package for training, for instance, it's various things. So it's through our program that is happening. It's driven by the CRDP, but we always engage the clients because we believe that these people actually work for the clients, and therefore the clients or other fellow contractors will actually nominate them. So in terms of the women in construction, that's how we drive it. We have statistics. I'm going to show you the stats when somebody else is responding to other questions, just to show you that on a daily basis, you can actually get the statistics of how many women are involved at what grade. You know the stats that I was showing you? Show it by grade, show it by class of works on any day. The youth-owned construction companies as well. But the issue of people with disabilities is a very controversial issue in the sense that when it comes to construction, and I know that the various people have actually criticized my position, I believe that the construction site is a very dynamic environment. We should not expose people with disabilities to that environment. And I remember that one very senior politician said, but a person, for instance, who cannot speak and cannot hear will spend more time working rather than wasting time gossiping. And I said, just take that example. When the siren goes off because there's a fire somewhere, that person will not hear the siren. We're exposing people with disabilities to a dynamic environment. What we need to do is to say, once the asset has been established, are we providing facilities for them to use these facilities just like anybody else? That is a difference of opinion, but I believe practically that's what we need to use. You might say a person with one leg and using crutches, if they work at the corner of the building, you may have a fire, that person might not be able to run. So I'm just saying we need to be very careful when we talk about people with disabilities during construction. Once constructed, it's a different matter. All of us must have access. So that is our position at this stage, and we are participating in various forums where this issue is actually discussed. I know in the industry there are people who are passionate about it. But we are also saying people with disabilities who are interested in construction must be encouraged to go to universities and study these things, because they might be sitting in an office to design the very same building that is going to be constructed by others, so they are part of the value chain somehow. To me, that is the exciting part, where even government should actually participate in promoting people with disabilities to get involved in the built environment as designers, but they must not be involved in an area where there might be a fire, there might be something, people must run away, and we actually expose them. It might be one person at a time, but if you think about, you know, the impact to that person being a breadwinner, we might actually kill the person. So in terms of people with disabilities, it's a very difficult situation. I know people have asked, how many do you have as contractors who have disabilities? I was proud when I went to the Eastern Cape and there were awards being given to women. And many of them were actually people with disabilities, but they are owners of the businesses. They don't go to areas where they would have to run away and things like that. So I was very happy because I saw a practical example of people who are involved running these construction companies, but they don't have to expose themselves, with that. That is not right. In terms of the publications, I'll just go through the list just to indicate the minimum. And women in construction, I'll show you the latest statistics going with the ones that I showed. In the issue of late payments or payment delays, it's a very complex situation. What we find is that sometimes the person who must sign off has gone overseas, and the payments will wait until that person comes back. Sometimes it's because, for instance, the Department of Public Works or IDT as implementing agents, they are waiting for the Department of Education to transfer the money, and then there are delays there. So that's just one of the elements. But there are other elements where people simply don't take decisions. They must actually sign off to pay. I'm talking about those invoices that are due for payment. I'm not talking about those that have not been prepared properly. So we've actually analyzed this. We did a project a few years ago. We continue to engage with people, and you see where the problems are, and sometimes it's actually embarrassing. It's mainly, in this case, government departments. We do work with municipalities, we do work with provincial departments as well as national departments, and I must say problems actually come from all of them. We have a specific program called IDIP, Infrastructure Delivery Improvement Program, where we've worked at a provincial level. The survey that we did was between education and public works. So we're making impact there, because you take people who have technical skills, you put them in an environment where all they have to do is to facilitate the budgeting cycle and the planning cycle, and you make improvements. It just shows that sometimes you don't necessarily need the hardcore engineering skills to actually improve performance. You just need people to be involved in other areas to make sure that there's alignment, and therefore you make improvements. The issue of our recommendations, the recommendations actually come from the first review of the CREP's performance done by an independent panel. At that time, if I remember well, we had two experts from overseas, or international experts, we had three from South Africa, we had one who was participating as the secretariat, also from overseas. People are familiar with developing countries, and they then issued a list of recommendations, and part of these recommendations is what we actually do. The National Stakeholder Forum is a regulated environment, it's in the Act, but you have about 80 people there, nominated by their own people in the segment. But we go to the provinces, and that the recommendation actually talks to that as well. We must go to the provinces to talk to the people there. We've been doing that now for a few years. It makes a big difference when we talk to contractors there, and we don't go alone there as CIDB. We go with the Provincial Department of Public Works. The MEC must actually tell the people about the construction problems that are coming up, so that we close the loop. People mustn't see CIDB and then see the MEC of the department at another level. So we work together, and they seem to work very well. Contractors who work for municipalities, contractors who work for provincial departments, they actually come, and we deal with the issues. It's a frank process, a whole day we take to deal with that, and they don't have to go to head office. But we still have the National Stakeholder Forum. They may have nominated somebody to represent them at the National Stakeholder Forum. But again, National Stakeholder Forum is a regulated environment, about 80 people that have been nominated by various segments. But as I indicated, we will be going to the to the municipalities now that we have new councillors to teach them about the CRDP requirements, because municipalities must drive service delivery. And I think my colleague will have to expand a bit on that again, maybe at this stage, or should I deal with the others quickly? Okay. Can I deal with the others before we forget about them? I think, madam, you actually asked a number of interesting questions. In terms of the fraud policy of the CRDB, we've established a fraud policy which was circulated among staff. We then run workshops on the basis of the inputs that came from various people. We want to expose them, because when they have to be disciplined, and for instance, we go to court and they ask, did you tell them about your fraud policy? We workshop all employees so that they will not say, I did not know, because we actually discipline our own employees as well when they participate in this process. So it's been established through consultation with other people, and then we do workshops at least once per annum for all staff. The issue of the dating of the documents, if I print the document now, it will actually show today's date. So when you do anything to it and you print it, then it shows the date. But I do take the point that the documents have been progressively submitted. There is another one, outsourced service. The internal audit unit is a firm of consultants. We decided to appoint them so that we can learn from them. In terms of internal capacity, we have only one person who is actually an expert when it comes to risk and governance. That's the person that manages our contract. But at the end of the contract, we want to capacitate ourselves and make sure that they will then do it. Now, the controversy is we can't tell them that in the last year they will not be participating anymore. They must capacitate our people. Then the contract doesn't work. So what we want to do is to negotiate with them, and it's been agreed with management that towards the end we'll then start the process of saying, can you capacitate our people as part of the deal that we'll strike at the time. But if we do it now, people might start dragging their feet and not perform. But there's only one internal audit unit. It sits outside the CRDP. It's an outsourced service, but going forward we want to then employ people and have more capacity. The risk of having your own people at this stage when you're establishing the unit is that your systems could be compromised. People may have relationships and not actually come out and actually find people who are doing things wrong. So at this stage, we're using the expertise of people sitting outside so that one day when we have proper systems, then we can use our own people. I think I've dealt with all of them. Imba?
Honourable Member, your question on the stakeholder engagements. One of the major responsibilities we have is to make sure that all organs of state understand the CIDB regulations and implement it, and we provide that service free of charge. So clients just have to call on us, and we usually become very proactive. You know, if clients are constantly picking up problems with the way they implement the regulations, then we arrange a workshop, and we go down to wherever they are, it doesn't matter where in the country, and we conduct usually 2 to 3 day workshops on the CIDB regulations. So that is in progress, and of course now with the establishment of our construction contact centers, have become the networks for us in the provinces. They are better able to identify the poor performing organs of state, and that's how we get feedback for the national strategy to capacitate our clients. On the issue of late payments, I also want to give you an indication of the research we've been doing. You know, there's countries such as the UK, Singapore, Australia, who've had to go the legislation route to curb this problem. It's a bad practice. It's been going on for many, many years. In fact, one of the focus groups that we held on this particular issue, there's one of the gentlemen from the Master Builders Association gave us a report that exactly 100 years ago in South Africa, this problem was very rampant. And 100 years later, we're still sitting with the same problem. So what we have identified as the CIDB is that legislation is probably the best way to sort this problem out. But as you would know, legislation takes long. It's a tedious process. This is on our radar screen, but we are looking at short-term solutions. As recently as last month, we sat down with the owners of the four forms of contract. It's the basis on which we contract with contractors in the industry on construction projects. We've sat down with the four owners of those contracts to look at ways of discarding additions to the contract, while there's a standard form of contract, when we appoint a prime contractor, clients write in unethical clauses. Prime contractors write in unethical clauses, and that's why the subcontractors are struggling. That's why prime contractors are struggling. So through the value chain, we need to address this problem, and we're now looking at a way of discarding that additions to contracts have unethical clauses in them. So there are some short-term solutions that we can put in place, but I think in the long term, we're going to be looking at legislation to curb delays in payments. It's a massive problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Three hands, and we are on time. We agreed that we'll end this meeting at 3, but we're still on track. Honorable Stolle, Honorable Mngoni, and then Honorable Mabila.
Thank you, Chair. I want to discuss the word raise it. Chair, on page 12 of this document, it indicates that there are only 82 grade 9 registered contractors in CIDP. Why? Because if I check on page 10, statement says greatness contractors have different dynamics where strategic intervention may not make impact due to the manner in which these companies are owned and run. It's because they are stable, they don't care about the register to you or what is happening on these companies.
Honorable Mngoni.
Kiala Bukhamdullah Sutulo. I want to talk about the downgrading and upgrading of contractors. On Tuesday, I had a meeting with contractors somewhere at home where there was this complaint about the if an emerging contractor wants to tender for a project which he does not or see or he does not meet the requirement grade-wise, and then they decide to go for a joint venture with a one who's perhaps next to that grade. When they go into that system that is in place, press buttons, those buttons downgrade, including the bigger contractor who's got a to lower grade. Now, that is a very serious concern. I don't know whether you understand what I'm saying. A grade 2 contractor wants to tender for a grade 5 project. Now, he can't do it, or she can't do it. Now, he approaches the grade 6 contractor for a joint venture. When they tender, now they press the button. The button takes them to 4, grade 4 or grade 3. I don't know whether you know about the story. Yeah, but let me continue with my second question. Downgrading. I'm told that if a contractor will be in the grade for 5 years, she or he will be downgraded because he has not been getting projects, not because of his or her own making, but because she has been throwing in tenders and unfortunately she's not successful. Therefore, as such, she must now suffer because now she's going to be downgraded. Again, they raise the question of you'll find a contractor, emerging contractor, doing 5 projects, but very small amounts. Now, when they apply for upgrading, CIDB only takes 1 project out of the 5. Which means if she did a 1 million rand project on 200,000, CIDB only takes 200,000, which disprivileges this contractor to get into the second, to the higher grade. There was this complaint as well that you are grading, the CIDP grading system, you grade capitalists, not what the contractor, the bank balance. You grade the capitalists. With other words, only the assets that the contractor is having, not what the contractor is having. You are only dealing with the assets. Now that's what you grade. Now, I you know, I'm a little bit worried because here I'm talking to emerging contractors. I'm talking about emerging contractors who want to see themselves one day becoming the stocks and stocks of this world. But with this system, you must help in that, because that do you see them one day become stocks and stocks of this world? Because surely, CIDP, I'm still maintaining what I said sometimes last year or last of last year, that there is a lot of element of gatekeeping. You must remember that for a emerging entrepreneur to arrive at grade 9, it's a battle. It's not a child's play. Hence, if you can draw in your graph there and say, you look at how many previously disadvantaged entrepreneurs in construction business, the number will make you cry. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Val. When reading this this document on page 47, angazi ngiyibonini, andingibonanga. Page 47, Chair, when looking at that budget, it raises some question marks, because the indication here, no mangasi accountant, no mangasi, was that the total amount was just divided by 12. You know, so that there's a breakdown per month. I don't think that is the correct budget, because the budget depends on the activity that is supposed to be done in that particular month or in that particular quarter. But when looking from April to March, it's just the same amount. What's the figure? Yo. Maybe can I get a clarity check on this one, because it really, really, really confuses me. Secondly, page 1 is the same document. When looking at the staffing, we're being referred to the annexure 7. But here in the document, there's no annexure. I don't know whether it's my document that doesn't have annexure 7. Because the last annexure in my document is annexure 6. But on page 31, we're being referred to understaffing. We're being referred to annexure 7. I am totally low annexure 7. Then the last one, Chair, on the issue, just to get the clarity on the issue of the bursaries and interns, so that you get the clear understanding how many bursaries, how many people will be assisted with bursaries, and also how many interns will be taken, internship programs will be done in this financial year 11 and 12. And also just to get one clarity, the most challenge that we are mentioning in this document is the challenge of fraud and corruption. One day I was asked a question by one member from my constituency that when you go and register, they register with around about 700. Is it 700? What is it that is 700 rand? Yes, the registration is 700 rand. Then he went to the Nelspruit office to register. Then I think after 3 weeks or 4 weeks, they phoned him.
that no, you've got additional information that you have to submit. When he submitted that information, then he was forced to pay another money because they've said the time has lapsed. Can I be clarified? What is the procedure? Because if you're talking with corruption in almost all these documents, it raises some eyebrows. If I apply for registration, there's one document that I was supposed to attach, then I'm phoned after 2 weeks that you have to bring this document. Then they force me to pay the same amount because the time frame has lapsed. What time frame? Thank you, Chair.
CIDP, can you please respond?
May I respond to some, and then my colleagues will assist with others, or even adding to what I would be saying. I think we'd need the details of that particular contract, Honourable Member, because the registration with the CIDP is a controlled process. Sometimes people submit documents and they don't submit certain documents. Once we've accepted the document actually goes through a process, and there are people who will actually discover what is outstanding and what's not outstanding. Now, during the processing, it may happen sometimes that we demand certain documents that were expiring in the process, okay? So we need to know the specific case, because the fees that are paid to the CIDP are standard. Whether you go to whichever office, it's actually the same. Grade 1s actually pay a certain sum of money. Above that, then they change. Grade 1s don't pay every year. They pay when they register. For 3 years, we've decided that they shouldn't pay because we are trying to support them. But from grade 2 and up, they actually pay admin fees as well as annual fees. We'd have to deal with the details, because when people say, this is what happened to me, we need to investigate. There may be, for instance, people that we've decided to suspend that were involved in corruption, but it's not like in all offices that things are happening like that. So we'd have to know the specific case. The CIDP grading CIDP grading system looks at the capability of a contractor, and we use two criteria. The first criteria is the financial capability. We don't look at how much the contractor has. All we need is, does that contractor have access to support that would actually lead to a better grade? So the issue between capital and what they have was a bit confusing to me. When we look at the financial capability, we look at all aspects that would actually support the contractor. Even when we look at the turnover that we look at would actually look at it favorably. If, for instance, we're looking at 2 years, and maybe in the 2 years, the performance, if you take an average, you find that the contractor would not have performed well. But in the last year of the 2 years, the contractor performed very well. That's the one that we take. We actually get biased towards actually supporting the contractor. But we'd have to get the details again of this, because I think the person who was talking to you doesn't understand the registration process. It is very simple. And if they go to the CCC offices, it will be explained. And it's also on our form. If they don't understand it, they take the form. The form actually is not just a form. It actually explains how you actually complete it. But our team would actually be able to advise. I think somewhere there's lack of understanding by the contractor. And then the issue of the banks and the, let me talk about the upgrading of contractors and maybe downgrading as well. Let me start with downgrading. We don't use the language of downgrading at the CIDP, because we don't go and downgrade people. The grade is an outcome of an assessment process. So nobody would go and downgrade anybody. So if the contractor is assessed this year and it is found that that contractor qualifies for a particular grade, it's an outcome of a process. We would not know what grade they would actually qualify for. Okay, so it's a process. We go through, all of them go through the same process. Grade is the outcome. Now, there's what we call the maintenance program at the CIDB. The maintenance program is structured such that for 3 years, in order to reduce the risk to government, when you give a grade to a contractor, you assume that these conditions would actually be maintained for a period of 3 years. Now, there are those contractors, due to no fault of their own, sometimes, that they would not be able to secure a project. Sometimes it's because they don't have what it takes to be a contractor at that level. So it's a number of things that we need to look at, but it's a maintenance program so that government cannot rely on somebody who was given a grade 8 years ago as a grade 5. Today you go there, that contractor has gone bankrupt, that company doesn't exist anymore. So it's a maintenance program to check if they are still in business, can they still do business, do they still have the resources that would have been required to actually put them at a particular place. Just a maintenance program. If they've not had a project in the last 3 years, it becomes an issue then. Do we say they must maintain the grade at the risk of government appointing them when they cannot do the work anymore? We've had a number of people that get projects, a butcher getting a project and running around looking for somebody to help them to build because they don't know how to do this thing, to actually try and avoid those situations. Once you have a grade and the grade is valid at the CIDB, that contractor then qualifies for work for that kind of grading. But in terms of the upgrades, people can upgrade anytime. They come to the CIDP, they say, I've completed this project, and therefore I would like to be upgraded. I mean, as I'm here, I'm receiving emails from people that say, look, I want to upgrade, what can I do? I mean, they must just go to our offices, they will actually get proper guidance in terms of that. But we don't take just one project in the sense that is being explained. There's a difference between the projects that a contractor would have done and one biggest project to determine if this contractor can do a project of a particular size, in other words, in terms of project management. But there's a difference between a company that can do a 500,000 rand project and a 20 billion rand project. The complexity of project management, how you align the arrival of materials so that you can go on to the next stage, it is used for that only. So we take it for one criteria, sorry, one element of the criteria, but we take other projects for the general assessment. So the other one determines the complexity of the project that people are doing. And again, we're happy to actually get in contact with these people and explain to them, because again, I see an element of not understanding how we actually assess. We need all projects, the track record, but one project must also determine in terms of complexity of projects that they can handle. The JV calculator, my colleague will speak about that. We have a JV calculator which allows for certain combinations of grades so that people can do the work. You find sometimes that a person with a grade in mechanical engineering, grade 1, has never done a project, wants to tender with a grade 6 in general building, but they want to do a mechanical engineering project. So grade 1 doesn't know how to do it. Grade 6 is not in that field, and they take a chance with that. So there are various things that we need to look at. For instance, simple thing without even going through the JV calculator. If you have three grade 3s in a particular class of work, they would actually qualify for a project one grade above where they are. But once you start talking grade 1, grade 2, and a grade 6, it causes problems. But my colleague would actually talk to that. The issue of grade 9s. Grade 9s are companies that may be operating in South Africa and elsewhere. They are run by their boards. Some of the ownership is actually sitting with the JSE. You can't develop those people. They decide when they get a project that we have too much at this stage, we don't have capacity, we're not going to do this project. We can't get involved in their situation. For anybody to say, I'm going to develop a grade 9, it's just waste, because those companies have matured to the point where they actually have boards that run them. They know how to deal with issues. They will have capacity. If they don't have, they would actually go and hire it. They are different from the guys that we're targeting. If you remember that mission, we are saying our target is actually the emerging sector, because those are the people that don't have the capacity. When you support them, they will then grow. But a grade 9 construction company, that's why you'll find that there are very few construction companies at that level. They will take big projects, and they decide whether they want to take a project or not. At a lower level, you find people that will take any project that comes to them, they end up not being able to handle them. Okay. So I thought I should actually raise those. There was something about the banks, and which reminds me, the issue of the MOUs with the banks that was raised last year. We signed MOUs with the four banks, NetBank, Absa, Standard Bank, and FNB. We signed MOUs with all of them. We're now reviewing how impactful those MOUs have been, with the intention of modifying areas where we need to have better impact, whether the problem is with the bank or whether it's with the contractors, but that's where we want to now intervene. We've actually started with that process, but it wouldn't help just to have a running MOU without checking if it's working for us or not. Yeah, my colleague, could you add? We have missed something.
No, I just wanted to add that the JV calculator has got certain rules added to that calculator, so it won't work, you know, for certain instances. And I think my CEO has explained And more often than not, we find, like, when a grade 1 and a grade 6 want to work together, the grade 1 is put forward as doing 90% of the work. And the reason why they do that is to score more points on the preferential policy. And that's when the calculator, as it calculates, it realizes that something is wrong here and it'll kick it out. And probably that's what they were complaining about. But I think the specific examples will help us to understand or explain how the calculator works. And I think on the issue of the grade 9, what will be very important for us is to get the scorecard, the BE scorecard in place to understand these grade 9 contributions to some of our social agendas, because right now it's very difficult to monitor them, as our CEO explained.
Thank you, Ndade. This whole page, like she indicated, you haven't responded to this.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Member, the as you can see, the totals do come to the same amount. And we do admit that we can actually improve quite a lot on this in terms of the allocations, you know. There are areas such as personnel expenditure, because we budget for personnel, for example, for the whole year. And our intention is to say from the beginning of the year we would actually have those people in. Hence, we will then split it equally, because it could happen, you know, because it becomes unpredictable in some instances. But the line items such as professional fees and all that, those, yes, could be staggered and all that. But in also chasing up this National Treasury full compliance with the new framework and all that, as we have admitted at the beginning to say that we're not 100% there, yes, this could be better presented in terms of breakdown.
You responded to it. Can you please raise your voice?
No, Mama Lala, he says only one woman there.
Grade nine.
At grade nine, for grade nine.
I remember, do you want to see the slide that the CEO wanted to show you on women in construction? Okay, thank you. Honorable members, we have come to the end of our meeting. And before closure, Akona will distribute the report of our public hearing with the department on their threat plan for us to go through over the weekend. Tuesday, we'll meet to adopt the set report and today's report before Wednesday. So pity, Mama. We have to do that before Wednesday. So let's go. Those who are good in correcting language mistakes and all spelling mistakes and whatever, please do us a favor to go through the report and correct the mistakes that will be there for us to present to Parliament. And for that report to be tabled on Tuesday in the House. CIDP, thank you very much for your presentation. The report will be adopted with those mistakes, but I think next time you need to be professional. You are professional, but not to our expectations. Thank you very much. Thank you, honorable members. Thank you, staff. Thank you very much. Please drive safely. Enjoy the rest of the day and enjoy your weekend. Thank you very much. See you next time. Your indicators are 6, ne? And we think we'll next year, or before the end of the year, would like to see if they were implemented. Thank you very much. That's it. We have come to the end of the meeting. Thank you very much.